Broadcasting live from the Harvey C. Jacobs Memorial Control Room in the heart of New Mexico State University, it's KRWG's Voice of the Public on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org.
Springtime is here. Are you ready to get your garden on? It's time for KRWG's Gardening Confidential. I'm Edwin DeRescent as your host for the next 2 hours as we ask, what makes your desert garden grow? Our special guest is Jeff Anderson, an agricultural agent with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. It's KRWG's Gardening Confidential.
Call in right now at 575-646-2212 or join us on our social media desk to ask your questions or comment for Voice of the Public. Voice of the Public is live after the news.
Welcome to Voice of the Public on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org. KRWG's Gardening Confidential on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org is brought to you by White Sands Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative, providing financing for landscaping and other home improvement projects. Offices in El Paso and White Sands Missile Range. Information at WSFCU.org. Join us as we take a break from political talk to discuss an issue that is important to us all in the desert. What makes your desert garden grow? From what plants to plant, when to plant them, to when to water them. Ask your questions or give us your gardening tips at 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Or join Anthony Moreno at our social media desk with your questions or tips. All calls and social media questions will be entered into a drawing for a $25 gift certificate to Guzman's Color Your World. You can watch the show live on Facebook as we live stream it. You can check out some of the plants that our guest has brought in. Our guest is the person I like to call the man with the greenest thumb in the Mesilla Valley, Jeff Anderson, who is an agricultural agent with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. He is here to answer your questions to help your desert garden blossom. Let's move beyond xeriscaping on KRWG's Garden Confidential. Jeff, welcome to KRWG's Garden Confidential. I'm pretty excited. We did this last year, and we decided, you know what? We had such enormous response that we decided to extend it to 2 hours this year.
Thank you, Edmundo, and it went really fast last year. It's hard to believe 1 hour can go that fast.
It is hard to believe it could go by real fast, and we've got some people all ready to go. They've got some questions, and we've been promoting this on social media, and we've got some people ready to ask some questions to you because people want to have a beautiful garden in the desert. So let me ask you this. What does it take to have a green thumb in the Mesilla Valley?
Well, to have a green thumb, you got to have the will, especially in the desert here where it's so hot and dry most of the year. And so you got to have that within yourself that you want to get out there and garden. So you can't just leave it to nature in a sense, although we have a great beautiful desert here and you could do that. But if you really want to garden on your own and grow vegetables, you have to actually get out in the garden and do the work.
So do the work, get the water. We're going to talk a little bit about, throughout the show, about the different types of soils that are, you know, because I live out on Rinconada off of Highway 70, but I used to live in the center part of town, and the soil is definitely different. What's the biggest difference in soils in the center part of town versus the outskirts?
So there are basically two areas. So we have the valley and we have the mesas and that. So in the valley, you have clay in the soil and clay and sand, so it drains well, it's fertile, and it's rich most parts. The trouble with being in the valley sometimes is that if you have heavy clay, like adobe, where you can make bricks out of it, that can be a real challenge to gardening. Up where you're at, on the mesas and that, the big challenge up there, it can be so sandy that no matter how much water you put down, it just drains away immediately. And the other problem, especially on the east side of town, is that you have caliche.
Caliche?
So you can have pockets of really hard, like, caliche is calcium carbonate, which is like concrete. So, you know, you may dig down a foot or two or whatever, and you'll run into this caliche layer, and you don't know how thick it is. It could be 4 or 6 inches, or it could be a foot thick, like concrete.
And caliche doesn't drain?
No, it doesn't drain. It doesn't allow water to go through.
Okay.
So I tell people it's like having a bathtub, and you're trying to plant in your bathtub with no drainage. And while that may not seem too terribly bad. The thing is that we have a lot of salt in our water, and if you keep putting water in and it keeps evaporating out, eventually the salt content builds up so high that you end up losing all your plants. They just die from the salts.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. If you want to join in on the conversation to talk to Jeff Anderson, who is an agricultural agent with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. We're also taking your questions on our social media page, where we are live streaming the show on Facebook. So if you've got a question or a comment you would like to make, join us on our Facebook Live as we stream to you live on KRWG. Also, as a reminder that we are going to give a $25 gift cards to a lucky caller on the phone and a social media user. So we're going to spread it out. $25 gift card to Guzman's Color Your World, which, by the way, you said these are these plants that we have here on our Facebook Live. They're from Guzman's Color Your World.
Exactly. I picked up everything that those on Facebook can see. I picked those all up at Guzman's Color Your World.
Okay, let us go to Marty, who has been patiently standing by. Marty, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. What's on your mind?
Good morning. I have two quick questions. I'm in Tier C. 4 years ago, I planted a locust tree. It's not a golden locust. It's the one that gets those beautiful purpley flowers. It's looking a little leggy, and I'm wondering if I can prune it now. I suspect not, but never hurts to ask. And years ago when we had that terrible winter where it was below zero, we lost all our ice plant. I have other friends who did too. I can't get it to come back. We can't get our ice plant. I cannot reestablish it. How do you grow ice plant?
Okay, so you got two questions there. The first one is the Idaho locust. So that particular tree is not the best tree for this area. It has beautiful flowers in the spring, and that's why you went and bought it. However, it's a very weak wooded tree. It's really prone to splitting and breaking. It's got really weak wood. You can prune it after it flowers. Has it flowered yet?
No.
Okay, so you may want to wait till it flowers and then prune it, but shape it. Yeah, you can cut back the branches on that particular tree. It's not usually a good idea to do it on trees too much, but that particular one, yes, you could. The other thing is the ice plant. So you're trying to figure out if I can understand what you're saying here. So you had ice plant, it died out, and you keep replanting it, it dies in the same spot?
Yeah. I've tried a couple of places to plant it. I've tried it in pots. It seems to me that birds are nibbling at it. That's possibly one problem, but we just can't get it to reestablish, even in the original place where it was growing profusely.
Yeah, your county extension agent up there, Josh Boyd, he could take a look at it there and get some samples. You may have some disease in the soil that built up there as a result of the original batch dying, or it could be just a matter of some cultural things. Or is it the same variety that you're planting?
Yeah, it is, and it died because we had a week of zero and below zero weather one winter, and it just all froze out.
Right, so you know, a lot of factors come into play there, so it could be the time of the year you're trying to plant it. If you cut off pieces, are you starting them fresh from store-bought plants or from plants you had before?
I'm starting them from dug-up plants at a friend's house.
Okay.
I'm transplanting from their house.
Okay, so you may be better off if you took pieces that are healthy and cut them from the original plant without any roots, because you may be transferring disease. And when you dig up some of those roots, they break and disease can come in. So dig up some plants, or not dig up some plants, rather, cut off some of the pieces there, let them dry for a couple days, and then plant them, and just give them barely enough water to root back in, and try that.
Oh, okay. Well, that's great. That's one thing we haven't tried, so I appreciate your help. Thank
You're welcome.
You.
All right, thank you, Marty. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. If you've got a question for Jeff Anderson, he is our guest today on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Let us go to Tina. Tina, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential.
Thank you. Jeff, I'm thrilled to talk to you. I've had a question on my mind now for months, and I want to go right to the source. My question is concerning the amendments, both the compost that we can pick up free from the landfill off of Sonoma Ranch and the biosolids that we can pick up free out west Amador. My question is, would using these amendments still create, or would it then still be growing organic vegetables? And do you even recommend using these amendments on a vegetable garden?
So we got two different products here. So we got the compost from the city. That's generally used as a mulch or incorporated into the soil. There's a lot of woody material that still needs to be broken down in there. So that can, in some instances, it can hamper some of your vegetables because breaking down those woody products takes away nitrogen out of the soil. It's a really great resource. I would age it in the soil before I planted some of the vegetables in there, but it can be a good amendment to add into the soil. On the other hand, you have the biosolids. So you can get a report from the city sewage treatment plant, the Jacob Hand plant, of what the nutrient content is of it. I'm a real firm believer in that product. It is a Class A biosolid, which means it's safe for use on vegetable gardens. However, with a caveat. So if you're going to grow root crops like radishes and carrots and that, what you'd want to do is have a separate garden where you could incorporate that into the soil a year in advance, and that will provide incredible amounts of micronutrients and nutrition to your plants for the next year. You could also incorporate it into your garden now that you're growing above ground plants and use that same spot next year for those carrots and radishes and that. But tomatoes love it. Oh, they just love that product.
Okay. And would my vegetables then still be considered organic or not?
No, not officially. They are not organic.
Okay, well, that was my question. Okay. Thank you so much, and I'm anxious to listen to the rest of the program. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for joining us, Tina, on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org, 575-646-2212, 575-646-2212. If you want to join in on the conversation with Jeff Anderson, he is with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. If you have a question or a tip on what makes your desert garden blossom, give us a call right now and let us know what's on your mind. We'll be more than happy to take your questions or comments. Just as a reminder, we're going to be on until 2 o'clock today. It is a special on KRWG Voice of the Public. We had such enormous response last year that we decided to extend it to 2 hours. Jeff, let me ask you this. If I have questions throughout the year, what's a good resource to go to? Where can people go to ask questions? Let's say that they live in Alamogordo or Deming or TRC or even here in Las Cruces.
So the best source to go to is the Cooperative Extension Service in your county. A lot of people call in at the University of NMSU, and they get directed to me, which is kind of funny. So I get calls from all over the state. But the best thing to do is go to your county agent in your county there and ask them your questions. They can help you. If they don't know the answer, they'll either get with somebody at the university, a specialist that can help answer the questions, or a lot of times they'll call me. So, and you can submit samples to them as well. If you have a fungal disease or some special problem, if you submit it through your county agent, the cost is free. We don't do soil testing, unfortunately.
You don't do soil testing?
No, but we can diagnose is what we do.
Okay. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. If you have a question or a comment on today's Gardening Confidential, give us a call right now and let us know what's on your mind. Let us go to our social media desk where we have Anthony Moreno standing by. Anthony, social media is lighting up. Lots of questions and comments.
Yes, we have lots of questions on the Facebook Live stream, and we will be getting to those here shortly. However, the popularity on Facebook all week long has drawn a number of questions. And Jeff, I'd like to start off with a question we got from Rena. She has a repotting question. She has a succulent, and she wants to know, should she repot it right after buying it or wait for it to acclimate to its new environment?
So, Rena, the best thing to do is acclimate it to your climate, get it used to your conditions around your home. And then if you are going to repot it up, because that little plant, depending on what kind of succulent you have, can stay in that pot actually for quite a while, and you can enjoy it that way. But when you go to pot it up, you don't want to pot it into a great big pot. You want to pot it up to the next size pot, because a lot of the succulents can't take a lot of root, what we call root room in that pot, and because it holds too much moisture and it'll cause it to rot. So small increments in increasing the pot size. But yes, you can pot it up.
All right, we have another Facebook question from Sandra, who asks, why did my fruit trees turn yellow and die? She says she lives off of Sonoma Ranch North, and the fruit trees were fig and apple. Now, unfortunately, she says she thinks that her five-year-old magnolia tree has also died, and as its leaves have also turned a grayish yellow.
Okay, it would be interesting to know and important, how long ago were they planted? Are they very new plants, or have they
been very new plants.
Very new plants, okay. So a lot of times what happens is you bought them from the store, and they come in a potting mix that's basically a bark mix. And that bark mix is not what's in your soil. You know, if you live up on the East Mesa, you probably have a lot of sand. So sand and bark, they're two different things. And when you put the pot, the roots in the ground, and it was moist, that quickly dries out. And once it dries out, it actually repels water. So even if you think you've got it on a drip and you're watering it with the hose and you think you're flooding it, what happens is the water goes through the sand, or if it was in the valley, it would go through the native soil. It goes through there. It does not go into the root ball that was originally, that plant was grown in. So it'll hit the edges of that pot and barely keep it alive. And you'll notice that the plants turn yellow and start losing leaves, because there's not water actually getting inside that original root ball to the roots. And there are a couple things that you can do. One of the things that you can do once you've planted is if you can take the hose and go push it down into the soil and push it into that original root ball and pump some of that water right into that root ball and rehydrate it, then the plant can start recovering. One of the best things that you can do is when you buy the plant and you take it home and you go to plant it, of course, dig the hole, make sure that the soil around it and what you're planting in it is moist, and then rinse some of that potting mix off of the root system and expose some of those roots for a brief period of time, and then plant it directly in the soil so that your native soil is in direct contact with the roots. So when you water, the water goes through your native soil and hits those roots directly, and then that should improve it.
Okay, and we have one from Alex, who asks a pretty general question. When is it too late to prune a tree or, you know, a shrub?
It's never really too late. There are better times than others. You can prune in the summertime if, let's say, a branch is overhanging or gets broken, interfering with something, you can take it back and prune it back. Most of the deciduous tree pruning is done in the wintertime, because then you can see the structure of the tree to better know where you're going to make those cuts and shape it. One of the things you never want to do is top a tree. People think topping a tree makes it stronger, and that's the opposite. It opens it up to disease and infection. And those branches, when they originally first formed as the tree was just a sapling, are attached from the inside of the tree through a series of bark to the outside of the tree. And once you cut off that branch and a new sprout sprouts at that edge, it's sprouting from the outside edge of that branch. And so it makes that whole branch for the rest of its life a weaker attachment.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212 if you want to join in on the conversation. Our special guest is Mr. Jeff Anderson with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. I am your host, Edmundo Resendez. If you want to join in on the conversation, just a reminder that we are broadcasting this show live on our Facebook page, where you can join in on the conversation on social media, and also check out the beautiful plants that Jeff has brought in from Guzman's Color Your World. If you have a question or a comment or a tip on what makes your desert garden grow, give us a call, 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Let us go to Karen, who has been patiently standing by. Karen, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential.
Well, hello, good afternoon. Yes, I live in TRC, and I have an organic garden we grew last year. The problem we had was the root vegetables seemed to come up. It turned out that they had nematodes in the soil, and everything else seemed to do okay. And I am wondering, if I bought diatomaceous earth, you know, the food grade, and mixed that in with the soil, could that possibly kill the nematodes that are in the soil, and what can I do about that?
Technically, not. There isn't anything that's going to really kill the nematodes in the soil. You can briefly kill them for a short period of time. One of the best ways to do that is through solarization, and that is to dig around the edges of your garden plot, get a good clear sheet of plastic, not a black, but clear sheet of plastic, put it over there, especially in the summer when it's really hot, make sure there's moisture under there and cover it. And the heat from the sun will heat it up and kill a lot of the nematodes temporarily. There are some other measures that you can do. There are beneficial nematodes that you can get as well. But it's not going to keep them out for long because most of our soils in New Mexico have some kind of nematode in them. So, you know, if that doesn't work out, something like that, then you may have to go to some raised beds.
If I were to do that to the soil with the black here before planting, I could get a good garden just this year, possibly, that quickly?
With clear plastic. Make sure not black plastic, clear plastic. So the sun has to be able to go through it to heat it up like a greenhouse.
Wonderful.
It can be effective. It can be effective even this year.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Karen. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Let us go to Steve. Steve, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential.
Oh, hello. Thank you. Yeah, I'm giving up on pecans. I got 3 acres, and then I lost about half of them in the drought, just the constant cutbacks on water. And I don't want to replant them with pecans. Is there another crop that MSU extension agencies are promoting as a cash crop, a replacement for pecans that we've lost? Thanks.
Thank you, Charles.
That's a good question. You have to have water for anything in the desert here. If you don't have water, you're not going to be able
to grow. Aren't pecans heavy water usage?
Pecans are heavy water usage, but don't get them wrong. They're important for this valley, too, to the tune of over $300 million.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there are other alternate crops. Depends on what you're interested in. If you're looking for a tree crop, sometimes you can get into pistachio nuts. They're very drought tolerant, but you got to, you know, they're
How do pistachio nuts grow in the Mesilla Valley? Because I know they grow well in Alamogordo because of the elevation.
It's not the elevation, it's drainage. You got to have good draining soil.
Okay.
So they're very drought tolerant. They do have to have enough water to produce nuts. That's critical too there. So maybe not quite as much as pecans. But there is another crop that's under investigation, not necessarily with the university here, but there's yellow horn. It's a small nut crop that comes from China, and we've been testing out with our master gardeners here. So the tree itself can survive on 6 inches of water, but for production needs, probably around 10 or 12 inches. But no experiments have really been done here in New Mexico to grow it. But it's a nut crop that's super high in oil, so 72% oil within the seed. So those are some things that could be done. There's some herb crops as well. Depends on what kind of crop you're looking at specifically.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. If you want to join in on the conversation on KRWG's Gardening Confidential, let us go to Tricia. Tricia, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. What's on your mind?
Thank you. I appreciate it. I have two questions, actually, and the first one is really easy for the extension agent. When in all my gardening catalogs, there's a zone map. And we're down right where the zones change. What zone are we really, truly in?
It's a little bit debatable. Technically, we're in a zone 8A, the colder end of 8. Some people would argue we're still in a zone 7.
Okay. I'm on the side of town near Lynn Middle School, so does that narrow it down any?
I think you're a little more of the 8A zone.
8A, okay,
yeah.
Thank you. I never could figure it out. And my second question is that last year I attended a very helpful workshop that was sponsored by the electric company, and the extension agent was in on it. My daughter is a graduate of the agriculture department, and so I really enjoyed it. And I'm having trouble this year finding out when that workshop is going to be. Do you have the dirt?
What was the workshop on?
On planting, uses of water, and a tour of that beautiful garden they have out there, which got me so excited I could hardly sleep.
And this was at NMSU?
It was at the electric company at the main. I'm sorry, maybe it was the water company.
Water.
I think
it's yeah.
Water. Yes, out on highway, kind of outside on the other side of town from NMSU.
Yeah, you probably have to call the City of Las Cruces's water utilities.
Okay.
And see, I haven't heard that they're doing a program this year. At least nobody's told me that.
Well, it was wonderful because they gave you some soil to use for mulch, the recycled soil, mm-hmm. and they showed you about the things that would grow here, which gave me a lot of ideas, plants I'd never seen before. So I hope that they're doing it again because it was very valuable. Anyway, thank you so much for taking time to answer my two questions.
Thank you, Tricia. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. If you have a question for our guest today, our guest is Jeff Anderson with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. Let's go to Jimmy. Jimmy, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential.
Hello. Hi, Jeff. This is Jimmy Zabriskie. I'm the community forester with the City of Las Cruces. And a question that I often get is people are concerned about conserving water, and they're leery of planting trees because of the water use. Could you please tell people about the benefits of trees versus their water use?
That's very true. And a person can actually go on the internet and get tremendous amounts of information about how trees benefit your communities and regards to water. The amount of water actually used by the tree, while it seems significant for us, is very insignificant in what its benefits are. It provides all kinds of habitat for nature, but it also cools your house, reduces your energy costs, so there's less energy demands for your power plants that are having to create energy. So there's quite a few overall benefits to having trees within your yard.
What's a good tree to plant? Let's say for me, for example, I live off of Rinconada, off of up by Sonoma Ranch, off of there off of Highway 70, and I've been looking for a tree to plant. I've considered doing pomegranate, but I just want a pretty tree that can give me some shade. What's a good tree to plant in my area?
Okay, depends on how fast you want it to grow and your water availability. So some of the best ones, there's a Keith Davy Chinese pistache. And Chinese pistache is a good tree. It's extremely drought tolerant, really good looking, except the problem is that they're male and female trees. And the female trees produce a lot of fruit, and that fruit can come up and cause some problems, because then you end up with a lot of seedlings in your yard. But there's one specifically, at least now, called Keith Davy. Turns really great fall color. There's Red Push pistache, which is a different type of pistache tree, another extremely drought-tolerant tree. And a number of the oak trees, if you pick the right ones, are really great and tolerant as well of drought. Great trees to have.
575-646-2212, where you can join us on our social media desk, where Anthony Moreno is standing by, ready to hear from you. Let us go to Charles. Charles, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. What's on your mind?
Parasitic nematodes. I developed them last year. I understand they won't go away. Nothing you could do to eradicate them.
That is pretty true, because our soils are infested with them everywhere. So you can kill them out of a small area, but they're going to come back in time.
Also, what power can I see them under in a microscope? They told me I need a compound microscope to see them.
I'm not sure about the power. I usually send those off to our state entomologist because I don't have any kind of equipment like that, but they're extremely small. You really can't see them with your naked eyes.
Right.
So I'm not sure about the power of the microscope.
I was told also plant in pots. Bury the pots.
Bury the pots.
To avoid the nematodes?
Yeah. Create a barrier.
Well, it'll avoid the nematodes for a while, but you've got to have drainage holes in the bottom, and they can eventually work their way into there. So, if you had them in pots, if you have them raised above the ground, that's the best way to separate it from the nematodes in your soil. Raised beds, especially if they're separation.
Okay. Okay. Any other ideas?
For avoiding nematodes?
Like, well, dealing with the problems, I already have them.
I don't think you want to go to a nematicide. Those are expensive and not generally available to the public. That's a chemical control. The trouble is, like I said, you know, you can kill them in an area, and in time they'll come back. So solarization is one of the best means that a homeowner can do to continually fight them back, keep them out of an area. Okay.
Thank you, Charles. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. It's KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Good afternoon. I'm Edmundo Resendez. Let us go to Renee. Renee, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. What's on your mind?
Actually, I have two questions. One's the husband-wife debate, and I'm just trying to find out if I'm right. We are California transplants, and we have kind of like a xeriscape yard, for lack of better terms. It's a lot of rocks, a lot of tolerant plants, and even a desert willow out in the backyard. My husband, for the last 2 years, has been turning off the sprinklers all winter long, and I'm trying to tell him, no, they need water during the winter. Which one is right? We have birds of paradise and a few other plants I don't know, because I'm still not familiar with all the plants out here.
Well, you're kind of both right. Depends on the plant. For a lot of our native desert plants, you technically probably could turn off the water, and they're going to be fine once they're established. But depending on the plant, if it's an evergreen plant, it's probably going to need some kind of little bit of water, maybe once a month, to keep its root system alive. If your soil is really dry in the wintertime, even the native plants need a little bit of moisture there.
Okay, so like Birds of Paradise is obviously not evergreen. I mean, they've come back nicely both times, and so is the desert willow. We have another tree that I'm about ready to yank. I have no idea what it is, but I think water isn't getting to it properly, because all it does is give up tiny, tiny little leaves. So I think I've been told it's a dead tree, but there's other plants that kind of have some green Sharpie spikes. Is that considered an evergreen, or is that a desert plant?
It's kind of difficult without seeing a picture of it. Green Sharpie spikes is difficult. Could be a crucifixion thorn. There's a number of really great plants around here. And if you, I had somebody call the other day because they were wondering why their creosote was dying. We have a lot of creosote in the desert. And they had changed.
I have tons of creosote out in the yard.
Yeah, so they had put in a new home, and all their landscape, including their ocotillo and their cactus, everything went on the same drip irrigation system, being watered all winter. And so they were wondering why their creosote had all died that were on the drips. And I said, well, if you look out in the desert, nothing out there is getting watered through the winter, and almost, you know, only during the rainy season. So putting on a lot of extra water can rot the roots out, especially on our native plants. So, you know, winter watering especially, even though the bird of paradise that you have isn't native, it's actually from the Caribbean, if you have the red bird of paradise. And like lantana, a lot of people have lantana, and once you get them established, you do not want to water them in the winter, because that excess moisture causes crown rot and root rot, and then they die.
Okay, all these plants are definitely established.
Okay.
So... All right, okay, so husband wins that one.
So you you probably don't need very much water on them. I would probably take a good hard look, depending on what you have, and they may not need watering all winter. You know?
Okay.
Just be careful.
And maybe once a month during the winter,
that's it.
Water on them?
Yeah, that's a good way to, you know, really conserve water. You only need once a month.
Okay, and then my other question is, being California transplant, I'm really, really, really missing my citrus. And I've been down to Guzman's, and it sounds like if I were, because I live up in Talavera,
okay,
if I were to have a citrus plant, I need to keep it indoors.
Well, if you have a warm protected spot, you can actually grow citrus here. And there's some varieties of citrus. They're not California varieties, so we don't have that luxury. Our cold hardy varieties don't have quite the flavor like you'd have in California. But there is Citramello, and that is cold hardy down to 0 degrees. There's a new one that came out a number of years ago called Arctic Frost, which is a mandarin orange, and actually can take down to 8 or 9 degrees. But you may have to find those over in San Antonio.
Okay, but there's no lemons or limes or anything.
You can plant a Meyer lemon in a protected spot. I know they have them up in Picacho Hills, and I've seen them around town. I have one in my yard, and there's some really old ones in town. They have to be in a protected spot. They can suffer some damage in the winter. I mean, you can throw a tarp over them for some protection from...
Would a sheet work or tarp?
A canvas tarp, December, January, and that's just enough protection unless we go below zero. And citrus need to be on their own roots. Most of the citrus we have are grafted. It has to be on their own roots.
Good to know.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining us on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Good afternoon. I'm Edmundo Resendez. Our special guest is Jeff Anderson. He is with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Anthony Moreno standing by the social media desk. All calls and social media questions will be entered into a drawing to win a $25 gift card to Guzman's Color Your World. Anthony Moreno, standing by the social media desk, burning up. Anthony, how are things going?
A lot of action on our Facebook Live page, so folks can like us on Facebook and watch the program there as well and ask questions. We have a question from Julie, who wants to know, how do you beef up a sandy yard for planting a garden?
So if you got a lot of sand in your yard, the best things that you can add to it are compost. And the city gives away free compost. We were just talking about that a little while ago. But any kind of compost, if you can collect, you know, mulberry leaves in the fall, ash leaves, whatever kind of leaves, as long as you're not collecting a lot of seeds with things, those are excellent. Any kind of organic matter that you can get a hold of to add to that will improve your sand. Sand is a great thing to have. You just got to add organic matter.
Okay, and we have another one from Michelle, who asks, where's the best place to plant rosemary and or lavender?
Well, let's take each one individually because they're quite different. Rosemary will grow here very well in full sun. You got to have full sun. They don't like shade, and they like good air movement. So almost any place unless you're in heavy adobe clay soil. On the other hand, lavender. Lavender's a very difficult one for this area. Lavender requires above 80% sand in the soil, and you can plant it out. And there are two types of lavender. There's the French Provence, and there's the English lavender. The southern lavenders are better. The hybrid is better, but none of the lavenders here are going to live more than pretty much 3 to 5 years. If you can get it to live longer, it's exceptional. They do better up in Albuquerque and Santa Fe.
Okay, now you talked about this a little bit with the call-in question earlier, but I wasn't sure if that was all desert plants. How often should you water desert plants? You know, we have someone who has a lot of native plants in their yard.
And we're talking about the wintertime?
It's just a general question from Dale. He says he has a cactus garden and other native plants in his yard. He's just curious about how often he should water them.
So most of our native cacti, other than opuntias, you don't want to water them almost at all. Very little bits of water because they rot really easily. There are other cactus come from other places that actually can take a little bit more water. Most of our native plants, it's difficult here in the Mesilla Valley and the heights there because when we think of native plants, they came actually from the foothills of the mountain where they get more rain, or they came from somewhere else in the Chihuahuan Desert that had a little bit more precipitation. So it's highly dependent on what that plant is. But generally, they all need low amounts of water, but they may need a regular amount of water, especially during the summertime. Wintertime, a lot less.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. You can also join us on our social media desk. We are live streaming the show on Facebook. You can check out some of the plants that Jeff Anderson has brought in for you to check out and look at to see if it's something you want to consider for your garden. We had a question from Dinah who wanted to know, how do they screen out toxic plants from the city compost?
I think you're probably talking about like oleander for the most part. They don't. So what happens when you, in the decomposition process...
Yes, it is oleander. The one
those toxic chemicals break down in the decomposition process. So that's pretty. They're pretty safe.
Okay. 575-646-2212. Let us go to Rhonda. Rhonda, welcome. You are on with Jeff Anderson.
Hi. Thank you so much. This is Rhonda Diaz. I am the City of Las Cruces Utilities Water Conservation Program Coordinator. And Jeff, thank you so much for all the great information. I work very closely with NMSU Extension, and I thank you very much for providing all your professional people to come in and talk to us at the lesson learning workshops that we provide. I had two comments. I wanted to let everyone know. There was a lady that had called in that was asking about the spring stroll at the demo garden. That is at the utilities building, and that is scheduled for May 15th this year from 9 a.m. until 11 I believe 9 a.m. until 11 a.m. And then also the question about watering our trees. We are in desperate need of trees here in Las Cruces. We need so many more planted. And, of course, being the water conservation coordinator, I'm not anti-water. We need water, and we need water for, you know, the plants and the trees that are planted. The only restrictions that we have is water running off of the property and watering on the wrong day. So we're all for trees and plant material in Las Cruces. So keep on planting. And Jeff, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rhonda.
Thank you, Rhonda. And thanks for giving that information out and listening. And you're right. We do need a lot more trees in the city. Choosing the right tree and choosing wisely is the important thing. So like I said, the Chinese pistache is a great tree. And I don't want everybody to run out and buy just the Chinese pistache. There are other trees. But yeah, you plant that, you miss waterings. If you're out of town, whatever, the tree isn't going to die just because you missed a few waterings.
575-646-2212. Want to let you know that this show will go on until 2 o'clock. It's a special extended show on Voice of the Public. It's KRWG's Gardening Confidential. If you want to get in your questions, now is the time to do so. We have some open lines at 575-646-2212. Let's go to Charlie. Charlie, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Charlie.
Hello.
Yes, sir. What's on your mind, sir?
Well, I have a rather shady portion of my backyard. And big pine trees, and I've got an area about 10 feet wide and 100 feet long that is always in the shade. Well, it's in the shade, let's say, 50% of the day. My Bermuda grass dies there, so I'm looking for some kind of grass to plant there that can survive all that shade.
Okay.
What's the sturdy grass?
Yeah, your Bermudas aren't going to work very well at all. They're intolerant of shade. There's some fescue grasses that can tolerate a little bit of shade. They're not as drought tolerant. Your best drought tolerant grass is going to be St. Augustine grass. So it's going it's a coarse looking grass, and it's not it's not perfectly cold hardy here, but it's one of the grasses that will actually grow in that situation.
That's good. I'm familiar with San Augustine because I'm from Houston originally, so
okay.
30 years ago.
Yeah, it's a little coarse looking, but it's green.
Yeah, it's green. The dogs can run on it.
Yep.
Well, I'll go out and try some. Thanks a lot.
All right, thank you,
You're
Charlie.
Welcome.
575-646-2212. Let us go to John. John, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. What's on your mind?
John? Hello?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm sorry. You know, I've been experimenting a little bit with hydroponics. And a couple of weeks ago, I had put my system together and I put out some tomato plants. but the stems look great. I mean, they're nice and green, but the leaves are starting to brown, especially on the outside edges, and even some of them all together are browning. Could I have put them out too early? Now, my system is above ground and outside. Did I put my plants in too early?
Where do you live?
La Mesa.
La Mesa. It's been pretty cold out. Did you harden off the plants before you put them outside, or were they acclimatized?
Not really.
So that, you know, going directly from wherever they were, whether they were in the house or in a greenhouse, going directly out, they could sunburn very easily. It's a lot drier outside, so they can desiccate from the dryness of the air, but they should recover.
Okay, so I'll just keep on my watering cycle and hope for the best.
Yeah, be patient with them. If you have any questions, you can always give me a call later on.
Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you, John. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. If you want to join in on the conversation on KRWG's Gardening Confidential, good afternoon. I'm Edmundo Resendez, your host. Our guest today is Jeff Anderson. He is with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. You can also join us on our social media desk, where Anthony Moreno is standing by. Anthony, welcome back to KRWG's Gardening Confidential.
Oh, thanks. We do have some questions about rabbits. Renee and Michelle are asking some questions about rabbits. How do they bunny-proof their garden? And are there any types of plants that rabbits do not care for? Michelle says she's heard that bunnies don't like marigolds. Is that true?
I'm not sure if they don't like marigolds. I didn't think a lot of things didn't like marigolds, but I've grown marigolds and they've been eaten up by all kinds of stuff. The thing with rabbits is exclusion. You have to build a fence, a chicken wire fence, and you got to get it high enough. And it needs to be around about 3 to 4 feet a lot of times. I've seen rabbits just jump right over, especially jackrabbits and that. I don't believe they eat potatoes, and I'm sure there are some other things that they don't eat, probably lantana, but you're not going to be eating lantana either. So, you know, on your vegetable gardens, it's pretty much exclusion.
Okay. What about naturalizing? Are there any specific plants that are good for that?
Our native plants, grasses are good for naturalizing, especially like the Mexican feather grass. It can be considered invasive. There's a lot of other things like Ruellia. It has really pretty purpley flowers called Mexican petunias. They spread pretty easily, but sometimes you got to be careful, like Mexican primroses and that too. What you want to spread out real easily may become a nightmare when you can't get rid of it and control it.
Okay, we also have another question about a tree question. Do jackfruit trees grow here?
No.
Jackfruit.
I'm trying to think. Jackfruit, isn't that tropical?
Sounds tropical.
I have to look it up.
Okay.
I know I've heard jackfruit, but no, I'd say absolutely not. In the back of my mind, I know what jackfruit is, but I'm thinking it's tropical.
Okay. So we'll go back to our social media desk and look that up. 575-646-2212, or we can look it up after the news. 575-646-2212. You can also join us on our social media desk, where Anthony Moreno is standing by, ready to hear from you. Our social media desk, by the way, we are getting a lot of questions on social media and on our phone lines. If you do call in or ask a question on our social media desk, you will be entered into a drawing to win a $25 gift card to Guzman's Color Your World. Jeff, what are some good vegetables to grow in our area? I had very good success with zucchini a couple years back, but no success with my tomato plants.
Yeah, so peppers are obviously good, except for bell peppers.
Bell peppers are no good.
They will grow here, but they sunburn. They get really big, and they need more water. So if you grow the lunchbox bell peppers, the mini bells, they're hidden under the foliage. You get the same flavor as a bell pepper, but they don't get sunburned. Tomatoes, everybody wants to grow great tomatoes, and we're working with NMSU, our vegetable specialist, Dr. Walker. She's working on tomatoes, trying to find a tomato that's actually adapted to our heat here in the Mesilla Valley. But they're all, virtually all the other vegetables grow. Your eggplant grows really well. Corn may be a little bit difficult.
I didn't even bother with corn because it was just too much. It burned and it just grew a couple inches and it just didn't go anywhere.
They need a lot of water. And we get corn for silage, and you know, you look at that and the plants are out in the fields around the valley, and it's like, you know, 10, 12 feet tall, growing really well. But there's a lot of fertilizer input that has to go into that and a lot of water to get it like that.
Let's talk about invasive plants. What are some of the invasive plants in our region?
One of the first ones I think of tree-wise is Tree of Heaven.
Tree of Heaven.
Tree of Heaven. And it reproduces by seed and it reproduces by roots. And it can make a forest of Tree of Heavens in a very short time. And I see a lot of times people will get a tree from their neighbor because I was like, they're coming up all over their yard. And
are they pretty or something?
They're kind of pretty. They grow really fast. They're extremely drought tolerant, and they look kind of tropical in a way, especially when they put out their seeds in about June. And some of them can have these flaming reddish-colored seed pods on them, which is very attractive. The downside is they're extremely invasive. Tamarisk, the salt cedar, has been an invasive one, and we now have the salt cedar beetles, so I get questions sometimes about that. People have salt cedars, and sometimes they want to keep them, and they're like, what are these worms all over my salt cedar now? Well, that's the larvae of the salt cedar beetles eating the foliage off, trying to control them because they're an invasive species. We also, what else do we have? We have quite a few things. Bermuda grass can be considered invasive if it's in the wrong place, wild Bermuda, that is. Arundel, the giant reed grass you'll find along the rivers. One that's invasive across the whole western part of the United States is Russian olive. I saw some Russian olives. I thought they were nice and smelled good, and I drove all the way up to Washington, and there was Russian olives every single place you went, and they invade the riparian areas where we have a lot of our native plants and kind of push them all out.
Do they not require a lot of water? Is that why they reproduce so well?
A lot of them don't require a lot of water, but they're opportunistic, and if there's water, they'll use every bit that they can use. And they reproduce at exceptional rates, and that's what makes them invasive. Okay. So we have some weeds like African rue, which is invaded over by Luna County, and some of the other weeds as well.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. We're going to get to your questions or comments right after the news, which is coming up in just one moment, but if you've got some questions or comments for our guest, it is Jeff Anderson. He is with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. If you want to join in on the conversation, you can also join us on our social media desk, where Anthony Moreno is standing by ready to hear from you. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Jeff, the question I brought up last year, which is the mulberry tree. Some people have a lot of allergies to this tree. Why is that?
Because the pollen is windborne. Unfortunately, a lot of times, like when you see on TV commercials, you see a bouquet of beautiful flowers, and they relate that as allergy-causing. Mm-hmm. But things like apples, bee-pollinated plants, trees that are bee-pollinated with showy flowers, the pollen's too heavy. That's why bees have to move it around. Those aren't the culprits. It's those wind-pollinated trees. So we don't talk about mulberry trees. We do in a sense for the allergies, but we also don't talk about pecan trees and oak trees and junipers and Arizona cypress. Those are all wind-pollinated. So it's carried in the wind with their little spores, and they get into your nasal passages, and they're very irritating. And so that starts an allergic reaction, and then you start producing histamines. Next thing you know, your nose is running. And then that can lead into other things, which develop sometimes into bronchitis and colds and things like that.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Good afternoon. I'm Edmundo Resendez. You are on KRWG's Gardening Confidential, where we are taking your questions or comments for our guest, Jeff Anderson. KRWG's Gardening Confidential on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org is brought to you by White Sands Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative providing financing for landscaping and other home improvement projects. Offices in El Paso and White Sands Missile Range. Information at WSFCU.org. If you want to join in on the conversation with Jeff Anderson, give us a call right now. We'll get to you after the news. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. We are live streaming the show on Facebook, where you can get in on the conversation and ask your questions or give us your comments or tips on what makes you a successful gardener in the desert. We'll continue after the news.
Broadcasting live from the Harvey C. Jacobs Memorial Control Room in the heart of New Mexico State University, it's KRWG's Voice of the Public on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org.
Hour one has been planted and is done. Time for hour two of KRWG's Gardening Confidential. I'm Edmundo Resendez, your host for the next hour, as we ask, what makes your desert garden grow? Our special guest is Jeff Anderson, an agricultural agent with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. Let's get our garden on with KRWG's Gardening Confidential.
Call in right now at 575-646-2212 or join us on our social media desk to ask your questions or comment for Voice of the Public. Voice of the Public is live after the news.
KRWG's Gardening Confidential on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org is brought to you by White Sands Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative providing financing for landscaping and other home improvement projects. Offices in El Paso and White Sands Missile Range. Information at WSFCU.org. Welcome to hour number two of Voice of the Public on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org. I'm Edmundo Resendez. Time now to continue with KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Join us as we take a break from political talk to discuss an issue that is important to us all in the desert. What makes your desert garden grow? From what plants to plant, when to plant them, to when to water them. Ask your questions or give us your gardening tips at 575-646-2212, 575-646-2212, or join Anthony Moreno at our social media desk with your questions or tips. All calls and social media questions will be entered into a drawing to win a $25 gift certificate to Guzman's Color Your World. You can watch the show live on Facebook as we live stream it, and of course, ask your questions. Jeff Anderson, thank you very much for joining us. Hour number two. You ready for more questions?
Yes, I am.
All right, let's get to it. Let us go to Trish. Trish, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for being patient.
I have a question that's been I've been struggling with for several years, which is an infestation of horehound. How can I get rid of it without using something that's dangerous to my animals?
Well, the best way to get rid of it is with a hoe. So you want to... How much do you have, by the way? I should probably ask that. How big an area do you have of horehound?
About 3 acres.
3 acres.
3 acres, wow.
And I tried plowing it under, and that bought me a year.
Oh, do goats eat it? Maybe you should have goats. They eat everything. you know,
maybe I could borrow one.
You know, I would have to research that out for because you got so much, such a big, large area. If it was a small patch, you can use a hoe and keep the tops mowed off and clipped off and not let it produce any green, and it will starve itself out. That's one way to get rid of it. But 3 acres worth is an awful lot to try and cover. You know, you don't want to use chemicals. That's probably the best way to get rid of it really fast. I'd have to research, where is this horehound 3 acres at?
North of Silver City.
North of Silver City. Okay. So my suggestion would be at this point would be to contact your county extension agent there and pose that question to them, and then they can get in contact with myself and some people with the university, some specialists. We have a weed specialist, Dr. Beck, and find out what is the most effective way to treat that large an acreage.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Trish. All right. 575-646-2212, 575-646-2212, or you can join us on our social media desk. All calls and questions will be entered into a drawing to win a $25 gift card to Guzman's Color Your World. My name is Edmundo Resendez. Our special guest is Jeff Anderson with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. Donna, thank you very much for being patient and standing by. What is on your mind?
Oh, hi. I'm new to the area, and I live in the Sonoma Ranch neighborhood, and I'm wondering what are our watering days? I wasn't aware we had watering days, so I want to be sure I adhere to the rules.
So that's with the city, so you have odd, even watering days. So it depends on what your address ends in, whether it's odd or even. So, of course, odd days are Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday, and even are Tuesday, Thursdays, and Saturdays.
Never on Monday.
Okay. Never on Monday.
All right. Well, very good. Thank you.
Never during the daytime.
Definitely.
Only up till 10 in the morning and after 6 after 6 in the evening.
Okay. Very good. Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you, Donna. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Eileen, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a flower bed that I absolutely love, but I have a cat that likes to pee in it. And do I scoop up the soil that she peed on, or will my plants be all right?
So your plants can be all right if you periodically go out there and wash it down with some fresh water.
It should be
fine, unless they pee right on top of the plant, and if that becomes too concentrated, there's salt there, and it could burn the plants. But cats generally don't do that. They dig a hole, so rinse it through with some clear water.
Okay, thank you. I also have a second question about tomatoes and this tomato wilt. How can I buy tomatoes from my garden center and not get that leaf wilt?
Okay, if you're talking about curly top virus, is what I think you might be talking about. Otherwise, you might be talking about some of the fungal diseases within the soil. If you buy the plants from the store, they should be healthy. And the beet leaf hopper is one that carries the virus. It doesn't like shade. So a lot of times people recommend getting that row cover shade cloth. Not really shade cloth, but the row cover. And covering up the plants with that. And that's basically exclusion. The other method is just planting them later, but that's not so great for tomatoes because you plant them later and then it's too hot and they don't produce very well. But exclusion, covering them up.
Okay, thank you much.
Sure.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. It's now about 12 minutes past 1 o'clock. We have extended KRWG's Gardening Confidential to 2 hours, so you have about 47 minutes to go. If you've got questions about your garden and what makes your desert garden grow, you can speak to Jeff Anderson. He is with the Extension Services at New Mexico State University. Renee, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. What's on your mind?
How, two questions, and it's about the same thing. How well do olive trees grow here in New Mexico, especially behind a mountain? And do olive trees out here have the same type of detrimental parasites that the trees in California do?
Okay, two olive questions trees. About olives. I love olives. I think I have 9 or 12 in my yard.
Because I like to cure my own olives.
Yeah, so if you're going to buy olives, yes, they will grow here. They're sensitive to temperatures below 15 degrees, so you can get some freeze back. In the big freeze we had in 2011 when we went below zero, number of the trees died back to the ground depending on how old they were, or they froze back to the trunks, but they all regrew, and it'll take a few years to regrow back. I want to mention, too, that the leaves of the olive are also therapeutic. You can make tea out of them. They're antiviral, good for your coughs and colds. But if you're looking for olive production, most of the trees that I've seen for sale around here, like Arbequina, is geared towards oil, and the olives are smaller. So yeah, you can still make olives out of them.
I saw one. It starts with an S.
Seviano.
So, yes.
So Seviano is a good one. I grow Seviano. They're a large table olive. Manzanillo is also a large table olive, and I've had them produce here. Manzanillo probably, for me, has been the better selection. It's a very large olive and a nice-sized tree. And we don't get the pests here.
Okay, so because I had an olive tree in California. It got the parasite, and the reason for having the tree was null and void.
Right, so we don't have any of those problems here. Unless you bring it in.
Okay, great.
All right, thank you.
I try to buy it locally. And in regards to the olive tree, do the roots spread as wide as the canvas spreads?
As the canvas spreads? I don't get that one.
Like the tree trunk. The
canopy?
Canopy. You, sorry.
Okay, got it. yes, they'll spread at least that wide and wider. But olive trees are really nice. A lot of people don't like them because they produce allergens, and some people are very allergic to that. But I like them. I think they smell wonderful. Wonderful fragrance in their flowers.
Oh, yeah. No, I loved ours. So even if you cut it back, the roots still will continue to grow out?
Yes, they'll continue to grow out. That's on all trees. Okay. As long as there's moisture, roots will only grow where there's moisture. They won't grow in dry soil.
Okay. And up behind A Mountain, if I were to plant an olive tree, should I be amending the soil in any way?
No, you
or
do not need
compost?
To. No, you don't need to. They're pretty tough.
Okay, Renee. Thank you very much.
575-646-2212.
575-646-2212. Let us go to Dennis. Dennis, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. You are on with Jeff Anderson.
Thank you. I have a question regarding squash bugs. In the past few years, I've had real good results growing pumpkin, butternut, and zucchini squash, but this last year, I had a lot of squash bugs. I'm wondering if my soil would still be infected with them, or they would be coming back, and if so, what could I do to get rid of them for this year?
So squash bugs, they don't infect the soil at all. They live on the plant, they lay their eggs on the plant, and they hatch and eat there. So they're not living in the soil other than if they can find cracks and crevices in the winter time to hide in until the spring. So it's a matter of cleaning up all the debris. If you have squash bugs, cleaning up everything around them. But, you know, the adults can get into any kind of cracks in the trunk of a tree or concrete or anywhere else to survive the winter. So, it's clean them up. And then you got to check periodic through the time that you're growing them and suck them. You know, you can use a vacuum cleaner type device to suck up the bugs that you find there. But if they attack it too much, they're going to end up killing the plant. So traditionally what's been used is 7, S-E-V-I-N, some mm-hmm. 7 dust on the ends of your stems and that to help control that.
Okay. And that doesn't affect the fruit?
Which?
The 7.
No, it's not going to affect the fruit.
Okay.
No. You follow directions on the label.
Okay.
Okay.
I was a little hesitant to use it last year, but I will use it this year.
Yeah, if you want to grow squash, sometimes you have to resort to certain things, and you use the mildest. And 7's been around for a very long time, especially for garden use.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Dennis. 575-6. Forgot my telephone number. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. You are listening to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. All calls and social media questions will be entered into a drawing to win a $25 gift certificate to Guzman's Color Your World. We have 2 of these gift certificates available. We're going to give 1 gift certificate to the callers and 1 gift certificate to the social media questions. That way we can distribute it evenly, because that's what we are all about right here at KRWG, distributing evenly. Jeff, you had a question.
I was going to mention something that we talked about before. We were going to look up about the jackfruit.
Oh, it is. Jackfruit.
So we looked it up. I was pretty sure it was tropical. And yes, it is very tropical. It's adapted to lowland tropical areas. So You know, you're talking India, Bangladesh, the Philippines, places like that. Not okay. Here.
575-646-2212. Or you can join us on our social media desk where Anthony Moreno is standing by, ready to hear from you. Anthony, what are people saying on social media? What are they asking?
Well, there's a lot of excitement. People are excited about strawberries and tomatoes and some comments about trying to keep their strawberries from ants. But there is a question about shallots in the area. What is the best way to plant them? And Renee says that they will be planting them directly into the ground, or planting directly into the ground. What is better, using that or in a large planter box? Is it okay to plant them now? And they want to know if they should cover them in mulch.
Okay. So shallots, we don't grow hardly any shallots ever around here. And they're, for people that don't know, they're relatives of onions. And generally they would be planted in February as sets, and so that they grow up and produce their little bulbs underground. And you can plant them directly in the soil. I mean, like, that's what onion farmers do all over the valley here from Hatch all the way down to El Paso. Or you can put them in raised beds as well. So there's not a problem growing them in either way. You could probably do them in a large pot on your patio as well.
Okay. Now, we also have another question from Justin about bougainvilleas. He says when he first bought them, they seemed more of a fuchsia color. And now they seem to be just regular pink. He has the question, is this a soil acidity issue?
No, it's not. It's a light issue. So light and temperature have an effect on the color. So high, bright light, cool temperatures, you're going to get really intense coloration. Bougainvillea is a tropical plant native to Brazil, northern part of South America. We can grow it around here. We really enjoy the colors in that. Giving a little bit of fertilizer, not over-fertilizing it, because it's the bracts that you want to produce, not necessarily a lot of leaves. But, yeah, it's a matter of if you're in low light, they're going to be kind of lighter pink colored. And if you got a higher amount of light, you're going to get more intense coloration.
All right. Now we have another question about a peace lily. They want to know on Facebook what is keeping their peace lily from flowering. It's indoors, and they have added a little fertilizer and some water when dry. That's what they're kind of asking, is they're trying to figure out what could be keeping it from flowering.
Okay, so peace lilies are a spathiphyllum, and they're a tropical plant, and what they like is really bright light to get them to flower. So as much light as you can give them without putting them in direct sunlight, and that'll help trigger the flowering. The fertilizer is a good idea. It'll help promote the flowering, but you got to have enough light. So if you're not getting any flowers on your spathiphyllum, you're not getting enough light.
Wonderful. Thanks, Jeff.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Anthony. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. If you want to join in on the conversation on KRWG's Gardening Confidential, we are taking your calls and social media questions where we want to hear from you. Again, all calls and social media questions will be entered into a drawing to win a $25 gift card to Guzman's Color Your World. Good afternoon. I'm at Mundo Resendez. We're coming up on 23 minutes past 1 o'clock. We'll be going taking your questions and comments until 2 o'clock. Then let's go to Bobby. Bobby, thank you very much for being patient and joining us on KRWG's Gardening Confidential.
Yes, yes, yes. I was calling in reference to the horehound issue up here by Silver City. Out here where I live, there was a horehound that just covered the hillside, it covered the flats, it covered everything. And so the only really way to get rid of it, since it loves the mountains and everything about it, is you got to pull it out, because it gets real deep down in those rocks, and it loves the sunshine too on the flats. And so it really takes a good deep root. And like the man said, you know, unless you're going to get out there with a hoe and cut it down every time it pokes its head up, you know, it's going to be there. Goats are good, but your hands work best.
It's a lot of work for 3 acres, but I guess I wonder how much time. Have you done it?
I've done it here on this property. It's not an, even an acre, though. It's a lot of work. Because, like I said, unless you're going to pull it, and I mean really go after it, you have to dig down a little bit, not much, to get to the bottom of the mother of the root, and then you're going to run into the tentacles. And if you don't get a majority of that tentacle, the tentacles will come back.
Right.
And so, but it's very slow once you get it down that far if it comes back. And there is an upside to having whorehound around, because it is a bee food.
And that's great, yeah.
And that's great for pollinating everything around us, and we need it for everything that's killing our bees. We need everything that can help our bees.
And a good
after
ground.
Almost completely eradicating it from this property, I noticed that the bees swarmed more and more and more and more and more and more to the smaller places that it existed. And so I decided to leave a few of these places.
Mm-hmm. And it's good for stabilizing the soil, too.
It's really good for stabilizing soil. Yeah. Especially on a hillside, which is where a lot of it was at here, but it had grown so heavily that it had choked all the natural grasses and stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
And once it was removed from there, the natural grasses came right back.
That's great.
And it had kept the whorehound pretty much out. So, you know, there it is.
Yeah, thank you for your insight on that. That's great help.
No problem.
Thank you very much. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. It's KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Judith, welcome. You are on with Jeff Anderson.
Hi. I have a couple of questions. One is, how often should I be watering? I just had some new plants and some work done on the watering system, and they set it up to water twice a day on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. At about 8 o'clock in the morning and 5 o'clock in the afternoon, 15 minutes each. To me, that seems a bit much. And the second question has to do with, I have just ordered a raised garden container that is about 4 foot by 2 foot, and it's about 12 inches deep. Is that deep enough to grow, say, tomatoes? Or do I need a deeper pot in which to put the tomatoes? I know I should be able to grow lettuce and some of the other light things. How about peas, for instance, beans?
Okay, let's tackle the first question. So your irrigation system is set up to come on twice a day, 15 minutes each time, three times a week.
Mm-hmm.
So and it's on a drip or a sprinkler?
Yes. It's on a drip,
Do you happen to know what the drip size is?
On at least on part of it, I was told it's about 2 gallons per hour.
Okay. So if you're going 2 gallons per hour and you're watering trees and shrubs or...
Yes, I have some trees. There's a couple of peach trees, a brand new cottonwood tree, which was pretty good sized when they put it in, hybrid cottonwood, as well as some purple fountain grass and some sage and golden euonymus, a rather mix.
Okay, so what you're getting here is 2 gallons every 15 and divided by 60. So you're putting on like a half a gallon of water is all you're putting on in that 15-minute period of time. And if you're watering trees and shrubs, you have to look at how far that half a gallon of water is moving in the soil. So it may seem like a lot of water to you, but it may not be enough, because if you're not running it long enough based on the 2 gallon per hour drip setting there, that that water could be just getting down only an inch or two into the soil and evaporating. You're wasting water because it's not reaching the roots.
Right.
Most tree roots are in the top 3 feet of the soil, and at that, most of the roots are in the top 18 inches where they're absorbing food and water.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, make sure it's set up right to reach the roots.
Okay. It seemed to me that perhaps what I ought to be doing is watering it longer once a day.
Nope. Breaking up into two, as long as it's going deep enough in the soil, doing two irrigations, breaking that total time up, is better.
Okay.
As long as they both get enough water, because a lot of people may run it for that full 2 hour cycle every time they water and may not need it, whereas and so you put up that water, it goes down in that 1 hour cycle, rather it goes down the 2 gallons, and if it needed or didn't need it, it went down. If you break it up in two, especially during when it's really hot during the summer, you're giving the plant more opportunity to absorb that water instead of having it just waste away somewhere else.
Okay.
Because the roots can only absorb so much water at a time, and so putting on more than it needs, the rest has to go either down into the water table or just evaporate away. The other thing you asked was about whether that trough was deep enough for tomatoes. And deeper would be better, but you could still grow tomatoes in there, but you're going to have to water and fertilize a lot more often because you're in a limited volume. But you can still grow stuff in it.
Okay, okay. Now, how do I know how deep the water is going? Do I have to dig down in there and see where the water is going?
That would be the easiest way to do it. You could do it based on a soil test. If you had a soil test to determine what kind of soil you have, there are actually charts available that tell you how deep water moves in that particular type of soil.
And where would I find that chart?
I have it at my office.
Where can people get a hold of your office? Where are you located?
My office is on the corner of Spruce and Solano, so it's 1170 North Solano and the Doniana County Public Health Building. So we're there on the first floor. But you can email me I'm going to give you that one. It's Lance, and it's LANTZ at NMSU.edu. So it's pretty easy. You can email a question.
Email, please.
Okay, it's L like Larry, A like Apple, N like Nancy, T like Tom, and Z like Zebra. Lance at nmsu.edu.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us.
This is a wonderful idea. We've only been here for about 7 years and sort of, figuring out what does well and what doesn't do well. I was happy to hear you talk about bougainvillea because I've tried several times to put it in a big pot and it dies.
Right. Just because the store sells it doesn't mean it actually grows here. It may grow here for the summer like an annual and then die. So you got to be aware of things like that.
Sure.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for joining us on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. 575-646-2212, 575-646-2212, or you can join us on our social media desk where Anthony Moreno is standing by, ready to hear from you. Our special guest is Jeff Anderson with the Cooperative Extension Office at New Mexico State University. Let us go to Ted. Ted, thank you for joining us on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. What's on your mind? Hello, Ted. Okay, we lost that one. And that's okay, because we've got other calls ready to go. Let's go to Patrick. Patrick, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon. Yes, I have some large ceramic glazed pots that I grow flowers in the patio every year. This year, and in the one I'm talking about, my issue, I have a snapdragon that's 4 or 5 years old. It's been in the pot for 3 or 4 years. I added some pansies 6 weeks ago or so. The pansies as well as the snapdragon, the leaves are turning yellow, and I'm wondering what's up. I have several of these pots, and it's only happening in one of them. So I'm guessing it's something in the soil.
Yeah, probably either you have to dig down in there and see if somehow there's drainage impediment.
Fine with drainage. Set them up.
And you said
I was doing a container. It's the same as all the others, and I haven't had the yellow leaf before.
Okay, so if you've had them for 4 years, there's always a chance that you can get some disease problem going in there, but I would kind of doubt that a little bit. There's something going on in the soil, and it has to do with how wet or dry it is, or whether some kind of excess salts have gotten in there. So,
okay.
Are the plants turning yellow all over, or are they starting yellowing from the bottom and up, or?
At this point, they're pretty much all over. And it's not all the plants, but it's on one half of the pot. And actually, the leaves, now that I'm looking at it, the leaves start turning yellow at the top, and it seems to be working down the plant.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors that come into play there. The soil can use up the nutrition in the soil if they're not getting enough of nutrients there. And then the location of the pot, it can vary from one pot to the next. One can get hotter depending on where it's located. The sun can start cooking the roots on the inside. And you look at snapdragons and pansies, they're cool season, basically annuals. We consider them cool season annuals, but sometimes you can keep them longer. So they have a shelf life where they're going to live so long, then they're going to start dying out, especially pansies around here. It gets too hot for them.
Right.
So you
we
can,
haven't really had.
Why don't you send me some pictures at my email address?
Sure.
And send me some pictures, and I can take a look at that.
Okay, and I know you just gave out your email a minute ago, and I started to write it down, and I didn't.
What's your email address again?
My email address, hopefully you're ready. It's Lantz, L-A-N-T-Z, at nmsu.edu.
Lantz,
thank you so much.
All right, thank you very much. It's Lantz, L-A-N-T-Z, at nmsu.edu. Let us go to Kelly. Kelly, thank you very much for joining us on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. What's on your mind?
Hi, y'all. I would like to know for sure if you can or cannot dig up any plants from the desert. I kind of feel like you probably can't, but I do live on 22 acres. And I might want to move around like a Mormon pea plant or a prickly pear. So those are my two related questions.
Okay.
All right, Kelly.
So digging up native plants, if it's on your own property, that's okay. If it's on somebody else's or the government property, that's a no. You can get permits from, I can't think of right now who you get the permits from for
Land
collecting.
Bureau of Management?
Bureau of BLM.
BLM.
Yeah,
BLM.
Bureau of Land Management. You're right. To go on special areas where they're maybe creating a road and that you can get plants. But if you're moving them on your own property, it's very difficult to move a lot of our native plants. You start digging them up and they have real delicate roots. It seems kind of contrary to being in the desert and being tough, but their roots are only adapted to non-disturbance. And a lot of times you dig them up, you cut open the roots, you cut off all the water supply, and they don't regrow very well. So a lot of times if you can purchase a plant from a nursery, it's better. If you want to dig one up, dig up the smallest one you can and be very careful with it. Prickly pears are really easy. All you have to do is cut off a pad of it and let it dry for a week or so and then plant it right where you want it. Don't dig up the original plant. Just take a pad. Remember I said earlier was that there was a problem with disease. Anytime you cut open a root, we have all kinds of diseases that are native in our soil, from Fusarium to Phytophthora to Pythium. All these different diseases are native in the soil, and you cut open a root and you can bring in that infection unintended into the plant, and so you go through all the work and it ends up dying anyway.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. If you want to join in on the conversation, good afternoon. I'm Edmundo Resendez. It's KRWG's Gardening Confidential. We've got about 19 minutes to go, so we want to get in as many questions as possible. All calls and social media questions will be entered into a drawing to win a $25 gift card to Guzman's Color Your World. Let us go to our social media desk where Anthony Moreno is standing by. Anthony, welcome.
Oh, thank you. We have a couple questions about Tree of Heaven. One of them is, why do they smell so terrible when seeding? And also, how do they get rid of it?
So we have no control over the fragrance. It's genetic. That's what they were created, if you like, created to be like that. And they're some things find that very attractive, like flies or other insects. So they weren't created by us to enjoy necessarily. It's for the insect pollination is why they smell the way they do. How do you get rid of them? The best way to get rid of them would be for, and I've gotten rid of them, and it takes, you have to have persistence. The best time to do it is like in September. What you do is the tree, when it's after the rainy season, it's healthy, it's got its water take up, and it's right before fall. And what you do is you go in there and you cut it down. And as soon as you cut that tree down, and I know people don't like Roundup, but you can pour concentrated Roundup right on that cut end, and you'll see it soak in, and you want to do several applications of that immediately. You can't wait after you cut the tree down for that to soak in. And you want to do that, keep all green off of it going into the winter so that it can't build up any energy. So you got to do it ahead of fall and start killing it out so it can't build up energy for the winter. And hopefully by the spring it will have died. If not, then you need to go in there and treat those right away before it can put on green leaves and start building up more energy. Because as soon as it puts out green leaves, it's storing energy into its roots, and all the work that you put in to try and get rid of it can be lost in just a matter of a week or two if you allow the leaves to grow back. So it's persistence. You have to be more persistent than the tree. So it's a matter of who outlives who in killing it. If you don't want to use any chemicals, you got to keep every bit of that green off and keep chopping it out of there. And don't, you got to go out every single day and get rid of any kind of green starting to sprout so it can't make any energy.
All right. We have another comment from Susan, who has some interesting information about dealing with squash bugs. You can check that out by liking our Facebook page and following this conversation live on our Facebook page. Carrie has a question about using the glass cullet that she says is free at the recycling center. She wants to know if you know of any ways that we can use this material in our yards and with our home plants.
I have hauled 30 tons of the glass.
You brought that last year, and it was amazing.
Yeah, it's heavy. I'll tell you that. It's really heavy, and I meant to do it all this winter, but I haven't gotten back to finishing the job I'm doing. It's great in landscaping. I probably have the sparkliest yard in town with 30 tons of it on there, but I've put it on six inches deep. I really don't get any weeds growing through it except on the edges of my sidewalk. I live in town where other neighbors weeds blow in and sand, and so I get a little bit along the edges, but in the bulk of where I have glass 6 inches deep, I don't get any weeds germinating or coming along there. That's with a caveat that you have gotten rid of all those perennial weeds like Bermuda grass would love growing through it, you know, your bindweed and your climbing milkweed, all that would grow right through it, so you got to have those eliminated. But once you have those eliminated, the glass is inert, so water goes through it, and it's trapped down below it, and it benefits all of your plants. So there's aeration that goes through it, water goes through it, and it traps it down there and keeps the soil temperatures cooler. Even though the glass is hot on the top, to our touch, down underneath all the glass, it is much cooler underneath there. So it's great. I use the green under my landscape plants, my shrubs and my flowers, put that around it so that the green of the glass actually amplifies the look in the yard and makes it look greener than it actually is, because you got the ground green and you got the plants green and the flowers above it. And I use the brown cullet on walkways. So people often ask me, does it cut you? And yeah, if you really rub your hand into it and hit it really hard, it's going to cut you because it is glass. But walking on it, it may be really irritating, but I've never been cut by it.
Okay, and we also have a question about what is the best way to plant and raise potatoes in our area?
Well, we're not a potato state. It's difficult. You can grow potatoes here, though.
I've done it, and they're very tiny.
They're very tiny. We don't get those the right temperatures and everything to build up the carbohydrates in the potato, but you get small, kind of like they call new potatoes, and you can actually buy kind of potatoes from the grocery store and cut them. You don't have to buy special potatoes and pay a lot of money. So I've done blue potatoes that way, and they work really well. But generally, February, you plant your potatoes in February, and then they sprout. Mine are already up probably about 4 to 6 inches. They've already sprouted up that far. The funny thing with mine is I planted them and I haven't dug them up because I get really busy. So they sprout in the spring and then they go dormant and I could dig them up, and then they sprout again in the fall and I could dig them up and they go dormant. And I've had that for now over 2 years doing that. I haven't gotten to digging them up yet, but they come up all the time.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Jeff, we're going to go through a speed round here. We're going to let them ask a question. Going to get to answer it and move on to the next call. So, speed round time. Renee, what's on your mind on KRWG's Gardening Confidential? Renee? Okay, Renee's there. Who's standing by? Okay, so we're going to move on to the next call. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Martin, you are on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. What's on your mind?
Yes, my question is, will sugarcane grow well in Las Cruces, and what's the best time to plant it?
Repeat that again.
Will sugarcane grow
sugarcane.
In Las
Cruces? Sugarcane.
What is the best time to plant it?
Oh, I've never seen sugarcane growing here in Las Cruces. I know I've had that asked before. People do grow it. And the best time to plant it would probably be spring, like a lot of things. It's a summer grower. It's a grass, so that was it.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you, Martin. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Patty, you are on KRWG's Garden Confidential. What's on your mind, Patty?
Oh, good. I thought, I wonder if I'm still on.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm a renter here, and I've been in Las Cruces for about 2 years, and before that I was a much hotter desert person, so this is the first time I saw a freeze. And I just have to say real quick about the bougainvillea, I laughed when you said that because I was like, oh, so it's not going to come back now that it's frozen, because I've still got the roots in the ground, thinking, well, maybe it'll pop up again, I don't know. But as a renter, I want the fastest-growing shade tree, and I know I came here through here in a motorhome, and one of the campgrounds, they had these huge, beautiful trees, and I guess they're like Chinese pistachio or something like that, and I want information on those as far as when to buy them, where should I buy them locally, can I buy them locally, and any information you have.
Okay.
Yeah, you can buy them locally. Virtually all the nurseries do carry them. They're not a fast-growing tree. They're considered moderate. And if they don't get enough water, they don't want to be overwatered, but they're real slow if they're not getting enough water. It takes a while to get them established. So if you want a bigger one, you have to buy the biggest one that you can afford to buy. If you want a faster-growing tree, I would consider an oak. And people usually think oaks are really slow-growing. But there's a Texas red oak, and Texas red oak grows just fine. If you want an evergreen, you can do like the escarpment live oak. There's also our native gamble oak. And depending on how much space you have, that's the hard part, because you don't want to plant a big tree in a small lot. There's a Mexican sycamore as well. It's not like any other sycamore, so please don't get that wrong. A lot of our sycamores have problems, but Mexican sycamore is the one that doesn't have the problem.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. This is KRWG's Gardening Confidential. I am your host, Edmundo Resendez. Our guest is Mr. Jeff Anderson with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. Pete, you are on with Mr. Jeff Anderson. What's on your mind, Jeff? Pete?
Hey, thank you, guys. Just like you guys inspire people to grow things, I totally agree, and I'd like to encourage people to look at the things that are on the web as far as gray water. If Jeff, you want to say what pertains in terms of municipal law and permits, I don't know anything about that, but I've done it for 30 years, and it can be simple, or it can be more sophisticated. But I say that kind of for the people that have said, oh, gee, I feel so guilty planting a tree because it's going to use so much water. We waste our water. And one of the easiest things to do is to people that have a kitchen sink. Kitchen sinks are usually on the outside of the building. And you can, and if it's a double sink, you can cut one half. It goes outside to water your tree or garden. And the other half, where the chemicals go down, can just be kept, you know, going to the city water or the septic tank. But I'd like to hear your comments on gray water, Jeff.
You're right. Okay. Thank you.
So technically, you're not supposed to use water from the kitchen sink. I'll let you know that right off. And not from the toilet and possibly one other area. I can't think of it right now. But you can use it from the bathtub, the bathroom sink, and your washing machine. But you got to be careful in all of these, however you're going to use it. What you got to know what you're putting down your sink. If you're putting toxins down, even if it's in the bathtub, you're not going to be running that out to the tree. And it's a great way to conserve water and use that water. So an excellent thing to do. If you're worried about water and watering a tree, choose ones that are really drought tolerant. If you have a lot of water, like if you had a lot of kids or something and they're taking baths and stuff all the time, maybe you want to plant a tree that uses a little bit more water. But there are ordinances that you can get online. NMSU has a publication. And I would say if you want to find the publication, you can either email me or you can go to aces.nmsu.edu/pubs, P-U-B-S. And that should take you to the website, and you just type in gray water.
You're listening to KRWG's Gardening Confidential on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org. Let us go to our social media desk, where Anthony Moreno is standing by. Anthony, we're wrapping up the show. We've got about 9 minutes to go, so what are people saying?
A lot of conversation. There's a lot of helpful people as well. So like our Facebook page and also join in the live conversation if you want to find some links that people are sharing and helpful information with your gardening. We have a question from Lane about what native flowering plants attract hummingbirds and butterflies.
Oh, one of the best ones is Anisacanthus, the Mexican firecracker bush. It has these incredible red flowers, red to orange flowers on it, and it's like a hummingbird magnet. You have the Salvia greggii, the autumn sages. They attract butterflies like crazy, too. Anything that's tubular is particularly red in color, but it doesn't always have to be red, attracts a lot of the hummingbirds to that. Butterflies, Asclepias, the milkweeds are known for that, or any other kind of flower that has kind of a flat surface like a Galardia or a sunflower where the butterfly can land on it and walk around and feed.
We also have another question from Libby, who says she is curious to try an alfalfa bale garden. So she wants to know, how dry does the bale have to be, and when should she start? Any news of success in this region also utilizing this method?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people report that it's very successful. I've heard reports, though, that sometimes the alfalfa is kind of hayed to try and make a garden out of it. So, you know, you have to pay for it. But the main thing is that you have to get it wet up quite a bit, and it takes time to wet up the bales. But you can start them any time of the year. You know, you can wintertime line it all up, get it all set up, get them all prepared. And then you have to amend them with some kind of fertilizer, whether you use commercial or organic-type fertilizers, because as the hay and straw decompose, they take some of the nutrition away. But alfalfa is a little better for that.
7 minutes to go, Jeff Anderson. Let us go to the phone. Dr. Mark, you've been patiently standing by. What's on your mind, sir?
Hello, this is Dr. Mark Donnell in Silver City. I've had about 20 years experience growing things here, and I just wanted to give you a couple quick observations. One is that the water table is very low, so trees other than natives have a very difficult time growing here in regular ground. Secondly, the soil is pretty terrible, and I would recommend to people who really want to grow things to either scoop out the soil and put in good soil or use raised beds, or do what I do, and that's grow in pots. Even if you're growing in pots or raised beds, you need an inch or two of mulch to keep the moisture in. So don't forget to mulch everything. And that's about all I have to send to you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it very much. Thank you very much for all of those of you that have called already. Let us go to Linda. Linda, you are on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. What's on your mind, Linda?
Yes, I had an avocado tree by a sunny window in a big pot, and it lasted 7 years. One day it just died, and I don't know if I was watering it too much or not, but I have planted another from a pit, and this time the leaves grow very lush and green, but as soon as they start growing bigger, they die. They just are, I don't know if I'm watering it too much or loving it too much to death. So,
is it possible to love a plant too much to death?
Yes, it is. Generally, that's called too much watering. One of the problems with avocado trees is they don't like anything about being in New Mexico, pretty much. Our soils are too alkaline. Our water has too many salts in it, and our air is too dry. So it's possible to keep them alive for a while, but they tend to do exactly what you said. They tend to die out over time because of all the things that build up. Yeah, and they need perfect drainage. So they like water, but it has to be perfect. If it sits for even a little while, it can rot the roots and the whole plant dies.
But it's in a pot indoors.
Exactly.
Oh, so I'm watering it too much then?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, Linda. Thank you very much. Thank you, Linda, for calling in. And let us go to Gary. Gary, what's on your mind, sir? Okay, Gary lost patience and hung up. Okay. So those of you that already called in and done your part to join in on the conversation, thank you very much. We're going to have a drawing in just one moment for, let's go to Maribeth. Maribeth, what's on your mind, Maribeth?
What's up, Gary?
Oh, you're Gary. Gary, what happened?
Yes.
What's on your mind? Hello.
Yes, Maribeth.
Maribeth, what's on your mind?
Is that better? Can you all hear me?
Okay, I've got two calls on the line. Can't do that. Don't know how that happened. But anyway, let's wrap up a conversation by having, what is the best way to get a hold of you, and what's the best way for people to ask questions if they have gardening tips? There's the Lush and Lean Green program. What's the Master Gardening hotline?
Okay, so the best ways to get a hold of me are either call our office, which is 575-525-6649. But I'm not always there. I'm a real busy person, so I'm out of the office.
You were just where? Weren't you at a conference recently?
I was just down in San Antonio with the Texas Christmas Tree Growers Association, lecturing to them on Afghan pines.
What can you tell us briefly about Afghan pines as we wrap up the show? Because they're becoming popular.
They became very popular in the 1980s and 90s. They're a great evergreen that we have that grows in the desert here. And we traditionally have not had problems here in the past, but we've had problems recently. And the big problems are that we have borers and we have bark beetles. So if your pine is declining, if you've been watering and taking care of it and it's declining, it more than likely has borers or bark beetles in it. And there is a treatment for that. It involves chemical treatment. So if you're against chemical treatment, there's nothing you can do. So, but pines are great.
What's a good pine? You've got Afghan pine.
Afghan pine, Italian stone pine is actually more drought tolerant. We have our native pinyon pine, which is a really great pine. I see a few Japanese black pines. They can be nice, or they can be kind of scarecrowy, and they're more prone to insects and that. But at present, there aren't a lot of pines recommended for this area. And I'm sure there are ones that will actually grow here. I've actually tried a few that actually do quite well.
Let's talk about the Master Gardener Hotline. It's available Tuesdays and Fridays only. What's the number? And what time can they call?
They're available from 9 a.m. to noon. And the number is 525-6649. I also have a Master Gardener that has developed a website. If you're really interested in vegetable gardening and looking for some great information, and that his name is Daryl Schillingberg. So if you went to Daryl, DarrollSchillingberg, I know that's long, Schillingberg.com, he has a great garden web on there if you want to learn a lot of stuff. And there was recently a YouTube video done there, and they just did another new video, I'm not sure if it's on the internet yet, that was done about the Munson Senior Center garden, community garden, and what they're doing there.
All right, Jeff, want to thank you very much for joining us on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Here is the winner of the $25 gift certificate to Guzman's Color Your World. Can you read that?
We're over with already?
Yeah, we're done.
Brianna Lind.
Brianna Lind. Came in through social media. And the winner on the phone lines is Bobby. Bobby, congratulations. You've won a $25 gift card to Guzman's Color Your World. And any closing comments? Any closing tips?
Make sure you water your plants properly. Don't overwater. Most of your plant roots, other than vegetables and things like that, are in the top 2 to 3 feet of the soil. So water to the proper depth, and don't overwater and waste water.
KRWG's Gardening Confidential on 90.7 FM. And KRWG has been brought to you by White Sands Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative, providing financing for landscaping and other home improvement projects. Offices in El Paso and White Sands Missile Range. Information at wsfcu.org. Our guest has been Mr. Jeff Anderson, who is an agriculture agent with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. And KRWG's Gardening Confidential was produced by me, Edmundo Resendez, and Jacob Lockwood. Anthony Moreno handled our social media desk, and Mark Johnson was our technical producer. Jacob Lockwood staffed the phone lines. If you missed today's show, it will be available shortly on KRWG.org and on our Facebook page. I'm your host, Edmundo Resendez. Thank you for joining us on KRWG's Gardening Confidential.